This is Smashville Live. And Rene takes a long elevated shot. Bouncing. And he scores! Live from the Wholesale Link Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. Brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka, Red Spirits and Wine in Bellevue, and Spring Hill Heating and Cooling. Welcome to Smashville Live
on ESPN.
102.5 The Game and the Game Nashville app. Streaming live on Facebook Live, Twitch, YouTube, and thegamenashville.com.
What's up, everybody? Welcome into Smashville Live here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. You heard it. New Amsterdam Vodka, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, Red Spirits and Wine. Hope everybody is doing well, and I am so excited about this one because anytime you have Crispy on, Terry Crisp, you know it's going to be a good time. But perhaps the first, I guess, most popular Predators player, Jordan Tutu, is our guest tonight. So break out the whistles. Jordan, Crispy, welcome in. Thanks so much for doing this tonight.
Ron, thanks for having me, gentlemen. It's my honor. I'm looking forward to a great conversation today.
Yeah, and I thought, I was like, you know, they wore the reverse retro jerseys the other night. I had one. I said I'd put it on, and then Jordan signs in. He's got his. He's got the 22, so he's ready to go. Coach, we're ready to go. Put us in.
Awesome. Jordan, great to have you, son. I missed you. And right off the bat, I got to ask you, how is Jennifer, Sienna, and Avery? How are they all doing?
The ladies are doing great. They're growing every day, and it's a privilege and an honor to watch them grow and be home and just be a part of their everyday life.
And you know what? Right now, Jordan, you're lucky because you're daddy, and they love daddy. But imagine when they grow up and they start to tell the stories about when you and you played hockey, they're going to look at you and say, Dad, are they real? Did you really? You got a whole new life coming at you, buddy.
Crispy, it's quite funny because, you know, even around Kelowna here, people, you know, pull me over or stop me wherever I'm at. And the girls are always saying, oh, daddy, they call me Atata, which means daddy in Inuktitut. They say, Atata, why do people always want to talk to you? I said, girls, you'll understand one day.
Great. One day they'll have a great story to hear.
Oh, how old are they now?
Sienna is 4 and Avery is 2. So actually, Avery will be 3 in a few days, February 19th.
Oh, wow.
And just a handful, aren't they?
Yeah, you learn to have patience when you're a parent. So and this is obviously being home every day. Guys who are still playing and have kids probably don't really quite understand why the patient level's got to be really high. But when you're home every day, oh man.
You know, this is funny. You just used the word, oh, your patience level's got to be so high. You were really patient on the ice, weren't you? you're preaching, well, man, to the choir.
I think you might have to rephrase that. I was not patient at all.
You feel like you ever learned patience as your career went along?
Yeah, I think, you know, as you mature as a player and you get older and the years go by, you know, Crispy was around the dressing room when I was a young 20-year-old kid full of, you know, energy and all that. And then, you know, as the years went on, you learn to pick and choose your spots. And, you know, towards the end of my career, I was more of a mentor to the young guys, which was an honor. And, you know, just trying to pave the way for the young kids. And you learn that you don't let the little things bother you, you know, because it's a mental game.
And, you know, I got to ask you this, and people have said to me when they heard I was going to talk with you, we want to know how Jordan felt. And this is, I always think about this too. Your first NHL game, and you're in the dressing room getting ready for it. And you are not only getting ready for a hockey game, mister, but you're getting ready to represent a whole nation. You are the first to pull the blades on, hit the big lights. Bring us through that because people want to know. To me, that's what you'll remember the rest of your life.
Yeah, so I think the whole process really started the night before. I had a bunch of family and relatives and friends in Nashville for that whole weekend. And the night before, we all went out for dinner, and it was very calm and collective at the dinner table. But it wasn't until I got home and into bed where I couldn't get to bed. Trying to force myself to close my eyes, my emotions, everything started to hit me. And then the drive in the morning to pregame skate, driving down Hillsboro, I was thinking to myself, what is going on right now? Like, I'm going to go play my first NHL game. And then in the dressing room, you know, the guys joking around, and there I was in the corner of the dressing room, just watching everybody. Right. I get out on the ice, have my pregame skate, and it really hit me when I got off the ice and the media surrounded me. And I was just like, whoa, you know, all the camera lights are on me. It was a surreal moment for me. And then throughout the rest of the day, God, I couldn't even sleep for my pregame nap. usually, I'm good for a couple hour nap, but that afternoon, man, I was tossing and turning. And then I get to the rink for game. And I remember lacing up my skates and looking around the dressing room and saying, wow, like this is actually my dream coming true. And I was overwhelmed with emotions. I was thinking about my brother Terrence and how he helped me my path to the NHL. And as soon as I jumped over the boards for my first shift, a wave of emotions just hit me, because I knew, you know, my brother was up there watching me, and he had the biggest grin on his face, and, you know, kind of gave me a fist pump. And the rest is just history.
And yet, you know what? Just think about it for 1 second. We'll move on. But I'm sitting there thinking, that's a first that can never be done again. No person can ever claim the fact that they were the first Jordan Tutu to hit that ice to represent his nation. And that'll be with you forever. Congratulations. Yes,
and,
I enjoy
and it. You know what, Crispy?
And you know the nice thing is, you wear it with pride, son.
Yeah. And you, to be honest, being around you really loosened me up through all my years, because, you know, you're a jokester, and, but at the same time, it's business, right? And you got to do your job. You got to do what you bring to the table every night. And having a guy like you around the dressing room every day really helped me get those that weight off my shoulders, just to be loose and have fun.
When you first started mentioning that, you meet a lot of characters in the dressing room, and you're looking around thinking, oh, there's so-and-so, and there's so-and-so. Who was one of the first guys in a dressing room that you sort of warmed up to and said, you know what, I can be buddies with this guy. I think I just might be a good buddy with him. Who would that be?
I mean,
and not picking anybody apart. You got a lot of good friends, but one, your first start.
Yeah, I think Scott Hartnell was the guy that really, kind of
another jokester.
Yeah, he kind of took me under his wing, and he was there a couple years before me, so he kind of knew the ropes. And Hartsy, picked me up and took me out for lunch and kind of showed me around Nashville. And I think he's one guy that really stands out right now for me to really ease into the NHL life.
Yeah. Scotty Hartnell, of course, one from those days. What were some of your first conversations like with Barry Trotz?
Wow, I had many, many, many conversations with Trotsky, and I'm not going to get into any details as to why.
This is a family show, too.
One of my first conversations with Trotsky is, he brought me into his office, and he said, Toots, you are going to be an NHL player. But I need you to prove to me in practice that you are NHL ready, and your work ethic will do the talking for you. And so, you know, I wasn't the most vocal guy at that age. You know, I was young and, you know, very kind of naive, I guess. And Trotsky cared about Jordan Tutu, the person, you know, and still to this day. Also, you know, Mr. David Poile, they care about their players, not the hockey player. They care about the family aspect of the individual. And for Trotsky to reiterate that on a weekly basis, that, you know, he's there for me to talk to if I had anything. And as the years went on, it was almost like a father figure to me, because Trotsky cared about Jordan Tutu, the person. And I really didn't have that throughout my hockey career.
And Tutu, as you went on through your career, and we've all followed you, and I've read your book, and I see now what you're doing. I think it's at the Levin agency where you do your speaking, and I've heard you a few times in that. You transformed yourself from a solid hockey player to a daddy to a business person. That's got to be a pretty prideful travel journey for you.
Yeah, that's what life's all about. You evolve as a person, and you know, I gotta tell you guys that I started preparing for my retirement 8 years before I was actually done, to establish myself, to brand myself, to really dig deep into what I really care about. And, you know, cause a lot of guys, when they retire, they think life's going to be easy, you know, but it's a major transition. And for me, fortunately enough, I started working towards that eight years, you know, almost just right when I got out of rehab, to reestablish my brand, myself, and to, you know, really start thinking about long term, because you never know with hockey, one injury can end your career. And so fortunately for me, it's been a great journey. One of my greatest goals and achievements that I've ever done is to be a daddy. And, you know, I do it for my girls. I've stopped one cycle to start a new cycle for my girls and the next generation.
Jordan, I got to ask you, when you're going through it, Toots, and you're going through your walk through hell, when you're doing things, and you think you're on your own, you think you're doing it. One person, a player, that was your strongest supporter, who would that be that said, okay, Toots, enough is enough, let's get this straightened out?
Yeah, I would have to say Mr. Brian McGrattan.
Thank you.
You know, he came to Nashville the year that I entered rehab, and Gratz was, Big Earn was 3 years into sobriety, and for him to be able to communicate with me on regarding a lifestyle change was huge for me, because a lot of people don't understand that, you know, you go from doing what you love to do on a daily basis, and then you get that taken away from you mid-season. You know, it was very hard on me, both mentally, physically, but Big Earn, you know, took me under his wing and guided me and helped me. And, you know, I was able to talk to him about, you know, certain situations, and he was able to, you know, give me the information that I need to keep going on the right path.
He's Jordan Tutu, Terry Crisp, Chase McCabe here with you on Smashville Live. When we come back, we'll continue this conversation and the storytelling. I'm sitting here just enjoying this like all of you, but also be paying attention. If you're watching on our stream on Twitch or YouTube or Facebook or Twitter, whatever, there is going to be a keyword that pops up on the screen. When you see that, you're going to text 615-737-1025, because we're trying to put you in the building tomorrow night when the Predators take on that team from Detroit, the Red Wings. We'll talk about that rivalry when we come back here on Smashville Live, brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, and Red Spirits and Wine on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Hi. Welcome back in Smashville Live here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app, on Twitch as well. Brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, Red Spirits and Wine, Chase McCabe, Terry Crisp, and Jordan Tutu. Again, break out the whistles and be looking for that keyword that's going to pop up on your screen so you have a chance to win tickets to tomorrow night's game. Jordan, we're talking about your story and your talks with Barry Trotz and Brian McGrattan and knowing when it was time to go and get some help. I can remember, it's been 10 years now, right, that you've been clean and sober. I can remember I was actually taking my cousin to his first Preds game. And the news had come out, and he was learning the team. He knew who you were, so he kept looking for you. And I was trying to explain. He was very young. I was trying to explain what was going on. But what was the early days of that journey like for you as you processed everything that you were going through?
Yeah, it was quite the mental process for me. You know, everyone's different. Everyone's got their own story. And, you know, but I knew that it was time for me to accept the help that was offered to me. Realizing that I had a problem and admitting that I had a problem with alcohol. I wouldn't have done it with the support of Barry Trotz, Mr. David Poile, the Nashville Predator organization, and most importantly, my teammates. They all knew that in order for me to be the most effective player, I had to accept the help and fix myself. Right. When I was on the flight from Nashville to LA, to be honest, I wasn't scared. I welcomed the opportunity with open arms because I knew it was my time to get the help. And it didn't really hit me until probably 2 weeks in when I was at the facility where, you know, I couldn't communicate with the outside world. We had no TVs. I couldn't watch any hockey. I couldn't talk to nobody about hockey. So, you know, all that taken away from me overnight, it was gut-wrenching. But I knew that if I was willing to accept who I was and the problems that I had and fix them, that I will be able to prolong my hockey career. And it did. It gave me another 8 years of playing in the NHL. I know for a fact that if I didn't accept the help, that my NHL career would have been done. I would have been another statistic as far as addiction-wise and possibly be 6 feet under, because the addiction is deadly. And the fact that I got through that process. You know, it took a lot of years for me to really be comfortable and content in my own skin, but I couldn't have done that with the support of my teammates, the city of Nashville, who, you know, really accepted me and welcomed me with open arms. And I remember my first game back, I think it was towards the end of February, that when I stepped on the ice for the first time, the standing ovation that I got, you know, it brought tears to my eyes. And, you know, Nashville will always have a piece of my heart. You know, I grew up there. I feel like it's my second home away from home. And, you know, just I got nothing but great experiences in Nashville. The people are, you know, as friendly as they can come. You know, I'm speechless. I just want to thank the whole fan base, the city of Nashville, the support from you guys for allowing me to come into this new life. And I mean, today I am comfortable and content in my own skin. I am a happy young man who, I know for a fact that I wouldn't have what I have today as far as my family, my wife, if I didn't accept that help.
Tell you one thing, buddy. I'd like to have been close enough to see the tears in your eyes. You told me when that standing ovation was, because that'd be about the only time I ever seen you cry in hockey, because of all the battles you went through. And we were talking the other night with Shelley when he was in Columbus, and I said, yeah, you and Toots knew each other. And he just sort of laughed and smiled and says, tough character. you met some of the big boys going through, didn't you?
Yeah, you know, hockey's given me everything in my life, and I owe my life to the game of hockey, because it's given me so many more opportunities. You know, the emotions that come with being a professional athlete, you know, it's like a roller coaster. You're up and down, and I know when I was young, dude, you know, when it was high, it was high. When it was low, it was low. And I couldn't manage, you know, my emotions all that well. And granted, a lot of the fans seen it on the ice. You know, there goes Toots again. He's a wild character, that one. But, you know, early in my career, I was fighting a lot of demons, and I was able to use hockey as an outlet to, you know, get stuff off my back and use aggression and all that. And then when I sobered up, you know, I had clarity. I want to focus on playing the game first. And if a fight broke out, so be it. But today I got a clear head. I've had a few concussions. my memory's not that great. I keep telling my wife that on a daily basis, hon, you know, try getting punched in the head countless of times. It'll do some damage. But no, my health is in great condition.
Great. How much did you feel your first few games back after everything was clear, you were clear-headed? How different did you feel on the ice? And did you have to adjust because you had this energy that maybe you hadn't had in a while?
Well, it was a huge adjustment, right? You know, my life away from the game had took a 180 degree turn, and I don't think I really became comfortable and confident as a hockey player until playoffs started. I think that year we played Anaheim in the first round, and then Vancouver,
yep,
second round. And, you know, I think it was that series against Anaheim where I really started to be a confident hockey player and telling myself, hey, I can play the game too. I'm not just a goon out here to fight and cause ruckus. But, you know, my thought process was to play the puck, play the game right. And eventually I became a confident hockey player.
And I got to ask you, this is sort of neat. You wrote the book, All the Way, My Life on Ice. And you were talking with Petey Weber. And I listened to the podcast you and he did together, which was great, by the way. And something stuck in my mind when you said that when you're writing the book, and it took you a long time. You said an area where you said you wrote it to help our family move on and be comfortable. And I thought that was a unique phrase. What did you mean by that phrase?
Yeah, so I was in sobriety, early in my sobriety, and it was an opportunity where I said to myself, you know, this could potentially help me move past a lot of the things that I've encountered throughout my early life to put pen to paper and to really heal as an individual and get weight lifted off my shoulders. I didn't write the book to expose my family. I wrote it to help us as a family heal, to realize that it's okay to not be okay. And that, you know, the more we talk about it, the more open conversations we have, the better it is for everyone. And, you know, I don't resent my parents for anything, any of the, whatever that went on. I'm actually grateful because it's taught me to be who I am today. I embrace the challenge. In sobriety for me, it's given me clarity, a clear mind to really sit down and reflect on my life, on my early childhood life through my teens into my professional career. It was an opportunity that I couldn't pass up because, you know, this was a time for me to stop one cycle and start a new cycle for my immediate family. You know, everyone, like I said, everyone fights a fight we know nothing about until we open up and communicate and be honest within yourself.
So we talked about some of those battles that you had on the ice, I should say. I can remember, and Crispy, you guys helped me with this. This was probably, I don't know, 20 or 2009-ish. Sean Avery was playing for the
New York Rangers.
And was a pest. Just a little words I can't say on the radio, but would always pick at people and, you know, jaw, but would never do anything about it. And I can remember you get in his face and you're wanting to go and he's trying to run away and you guys both get put in the box for 2 minutes. You both go in the box and I'm sitting there with my dad. I'm going, Toots is going to get him this time. They're going to come out. Toots isn't going to have it anymore. He's going to have no choice. He's been talking crap all game, multiple games, and they're finally going to go. And he comes out and you look at him and you go right at him. You throw him down and you guys go. Do you remember that?
I sure do. I believe we were wearing our third jerseys at the time, the dark blue.
Yeah.
You know, when we first came out, those jerseys first came out. But yeah, I mean, we all know Sean Avery is a verbal pest, right? The guy likes to chirp a lot. I'm sure Crispy, you can relate to a little bit. I know Theo Fleury, you know, he's not the biggest guy, but the guy has a mouth on him. But anyways, yeah, we were in the penalty box and I didn't have to say nothing. I knew that, you know, he at some point in this game, I'm going to get my hands on him. And yeah, it was actually a couple years pass and me and Sean crossed paths and he actually brought that up. And, you know, like, a lot of guys can talk the talk, but who's willing to walk the walk, right? You know, me, I did a lot of my talking with these bad boys. And, but yeah, no, it's, like I said, it's part of the game. Guys chirp and, sometimes you gotta stick up for yourself. Right.
And you know what?
Go ahead, Chris.
Along the line, you have people that you've fought with and whatnot. And yet one of the most important things, and I can vouch for this because I have a wonderful wife. Jennifer, your wife, helped you a lot on this trip. I mean, we sometimes forget, and people out there forget, that we have family that we can lean on.
And yeah, that's – as a hockey player, as professional athletes, you know, your home is your safe haven. And my wife, Jennifer, you know, had that aura in our home where, you know, I could just be almost a little kid again and just, you know, be me. Not that I was me in public, but it was just more a sense of a calming, it's okay. We can talk about whatever you want. And I really never had that growing up, right? Where, you know, talking about your emotions and your feelings and, you know, I owe a lot to her sacrifices that, you know, she gave up to be with me and to be in the hockey world, because it ain't easy. Family is everything. And that's why a lot of people don't understand the brotherhood that is in the dressing room, right? You know, because you're with each other every day for 6-7 months and, the guys mean everything to you. And I feel that in this day and age now, guys are leaning on each other a little more than before, where, you know, those conversations of tough topics come up. And that's what needs to happen, right? Like our guys, we all, like I said, we all fight a fight no one knows about. And until you open up and be comfortable, you know, that's how teams come together.
Jordan Tutu, Terry Crisp, Chase McCabe here with you on Smashville Live. When we come back, I'm going to ask you about a guy that you played with here in Nashville for quite some time that just had a big milestone in his career. We'll do that when we come back here on Smashville Live, brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, Red Spirits and Wine on ESPN 102.5 The Game. That's right. It is Smashville Live, presented by New Amsterdam Vodka, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, Red Spirits and Wine. Again, if you're looking for that keyword on your screen, if you were watching on the stream on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, Twitch, it will appear and you can text 615-737-1025 and have a chance to be in the building against the Detroit Red Wings. I mentioned a guy that you played with for a long time here in Nashville. Shea Weber was the captain, just had his 1,000th NHL game, and COVID took a lot from us, including that the way the schedule was working out last year, game 1,000 was going to be at Bridgestone Arena, which would have been so special when Montreal came to town. But what was it like some of the early days of playing with Shea? And if I remember correctly, you're also one of his teammates' victims from his slap shot.
Yes, that is true. Broken foot. Shea Weber. I mean, the guy is a class act, you know, stand-up guy. The guy leads by example. I spent a lot of time with him this fall. Shea took up hunting. So I spent a lot of time with him out in the bush hunting deer and stuff. And, you know, it was, the patience, everything, the demeanor that you need to have while you're out hunting, sitting in a tree stand. Shea and I sat in tree stands for hours on end without saying a word. And I could watch him, just reminiscing about his whole career and just going through, all reflecting on everything. And, the guy just carries himself with class. He's a leader by example. And to be a part of his NHL career early on, it was great. But trust me, you never want to get in. I was a victim of two of his shots. I took a slap shot in the face. Marty Erat, I was in front of the net. Marty Erat accidentally hit his stick and came up and got me right above my eye. I had like 30 stitches. And then the other time it was off a face-off draw. I was on the board side, offensive zone. We won the puck and I just skated right to the front of the net. And I knew the puck was going right to Shea for a one-timer tee up. And I did I had my back towards him and I lifted up my right leg, do the old flamingo. And of course the puck hit my leg that was up, boom, right on the inside. And I broke a few bones in there and I was in a walking boot for probably a month and a half.
I'm laughing because you've seen that so many times, buddy. That's the leg he's going to hit on you.
Yeah,
I gotta ask
who wants to stand in front of the net on the power play with him teeing up the puck? Like, just the pucks, it's way too fast. Like, just yeah, it's gonna beat the goalie anyways.
how about you guys just sitting in the dressing room and your coach is talking? Yeah, well, on the power play, we're gonna get the puck back to Weber and get to the front of the net. And there's two or three of you guys that said, "Hey, coach, why don't you go stand in front of the net?
Yeah.
See how you like it. See how mom, you're going to be coaching, telling me to stand in front of whoever shot."
Yeah. But I guess that's the price you pay if, you want to win hockey games. You gotta do what it takes. And I was willing to sacrifice my body for the team.
And I got to ask you this. There's a lot of guys, and I know you took some guys out back up to Nunavut. When you were going and you took a guy up there, and I know him well, Kevin Allen from the USA Today, and you scared the living tar to him. One day you had him in the boat and you're heading somewhere. What'd you do to him that time?
Yeah, so Kevin Allen was doing a story on me in the USA Today, and I said, you're not going to be able to capture this story if you can't make it up to Nunavut. And it happened. And my father and I, old Barnyard, we took him out on the boat to, it's an island called Marble Island. And my dad, you know, he's a bit of a jokester himself.
Barney.
Yeah, he brought us to this one area where there's like a miniature cave. And my dad said, go in the cave, we'll take a picture, but here's a rifle. Make sure you take it with you. And Kevin was like, for what? He's like, oh, there's polar bears everywhere around here. You know, you gotta watch your back here. And Kevin wouldn't get off the boat. He stayed on the boat.
Big old tough Kevin Allen. Yeah.
Yeah. He stayed with Barney, my dad. And, the rest of that trip for him, I think he was in awe with, you know, everything that he experienced. Same with Stephen Brunt. When we were writing the book, I told him, look, we're not going to be able to tell the story if you don't experience it yourself. And you know, that's what he said. You know, if I didn't get up there, there's no way that I would have captured the scenery and the story and put it to words.
Awesome.
What do you remember playing some of those regular season series, playoff series against Detroit with them now back in the Central with the Predators this year?
Yeah, it was, I think that's where really Nashville became, you know, started to have really big rivalries. You know, we were playing St. Louis, Columbus, Detroit, you know, and us like in the same division. So, and we all know that a lot of the workers in the automotive business, guys from Detroit moved down to Nashville. So it was a great experience to be a part of, to build that rivalry up. And you guys all know what happened next, you know, my free agency. I'm gonna tell you right now, Detroit wasn't even on my radar. You know, I basically had a deal done with the New York Rangers, and Detroit came in at the lot. Literally, I made a deal with the New York Rangers and hung up the phone, and my agent called me back within like 20 seconds. He's like, Detroit just came over the top, and it was a split decision. I wasn't even thinking about, you know, the rivalry and all this and all, and it just happened so fast.
And then you even later on, you go and play for Chicago. So you got to play for both rivalries.
Yeah. And you listen to this, guys. So when I signed in Detroit, I scored my first goal in Nashville as a Detroit Red Wing. Then I moved on to New Jersey. I scored my first goal in Detroit as a New Jersey Devil. And then I signed with Chicago, and it came full circle. I scored my first goal. I think it was like game 81 or 82 in Nashville. I scored a goal. And,
you just couldn't stop from rubbing it in, could you? You
I mean, That's my home arena, right? The Gaylord Center. Like
you built that building.
Yes, you did.
Down a few nights too.
Yeah, but we're not going to get into that.
No, we won't get into that. Okay.
You mentioned New Jersey. You did play for John Hines, who is now the head coach here in Nashville. What were some things that you were able to take away from your time playing for him?
Yeah, Heinze is a very intense, hard-nosed coach, you know, strictly business and basically, you know, my type of coach where, you know, I wish I played for Crispy because, you know, it was X's and O's, boys, you know, hard work, north and south. let's get to work, boys. Hudson Bay rules here. Let's go.
Last man standing, buddy.
You know what? Heinze gave me an opportunity that, I was playing a lot more minutes. I mean, it just worked out perfect. And I'm happy that, Heinze is in Nashville.
We'll step away one more time, come back and wrap it up. Having a great conversation. Chase McCabe, Terry Crisp with Jordan Tutu here on Smashville Live, brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, Red Spirits and Wine on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
This is a Smashville Live.
Back here on Smashville Live, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app, and also Twitch, Facebook, Twitter, brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, Red Spirits and Wine in Bellevue. Chase McCabe, Terry Crisp, Jordan Tutu, our guest here tonight. So, Jordan, how much, now that you're retired and a dad, how much do you put on a pair of skates these days?
Well, it's everything shut down up here in Canada, but usually Thursday nights, one day a week, all the ex-pros around Kelowna here, we lace them up and get out there. So I play with a few of Crispy's ex-teammates there, so, or players, but a lot of great stories, a lot of legends, to be honest. You know, it's almost like walking into an NHL dressing room, right? With all these
as a rookie again.
Yeah. Old, you know, you'll know this name, Crispy, Mike Ridley. You know, the guy is on me every Thursday night, you know, hooking me. You know, this is old school hockey too. It's, you know, we can hook. And but yeah, usually once a week.
Very, very cool. So as we wrap this up, I had to do something. I was looking through some old pictures. So I'm about to enter my 10th year in radio, and I started out as an intern with the station, with 102.5 The Game. And so the first time that I got to go in the dressing room was a big deal, because I was a fan, but now I'm stepping over to the media side. And so I'd never been in there, but I'm trying to, you know, be professional and get audio. And a guy that, you know, Dave Hull, was one that took me in there, and at Jeremy Benefield, my old boss. And so I wanted to throw this up here, this picture of Jason Jordan on the Predators bench. I'm trying to get myself out of the way here, but.
No, you're not. You're trying to get in the picture. Come on, who are you kidding?
We've both grown up a little bit, but you could not have been nicer that day, because I was scared to death of, you know, just not screwing up and stepping on the logo and, you know, all of that in the locker room. But yeah, that was about 10 years ago, I guess, your last season here in Nashville.
Yeah, time flies, right? Time flies when you have fun. And, you know, all the people that I've met along the way, you know, especially the people in Nashville, right? Just family oriented, the organization. It was an honor to represent the Nashville Predators in that city.
And you know, the nicest thing about it, Toots, is the people you meet along the way in the sporting world, and especially the memories that you make with the teammates and the whatnot, is memories are they're very light to carry around, aren't they? They're not heavy at all.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I've played with guys early in my career, and I haven't talked to them or seen them for years. And, you know, when you meet up or you see each other, it's like you never missed a beat, right? Mark Eaton called me this past summer, and I hadn't talked to the guy since, you know, he left Nashville, but it was like old times again. So Crispy, like memories forever, and stories you can share with friends.
One of your teammates is now Crispy's teammate on the TV side, Chris Mason. And I remember, you know, when he was at the tail end of his career, everybody thought, oh, he'll do that, you know, he'll go into media, he'll do it, and he's been a natural. I don't know how often you get to actually watch Predators games and see him on TV, but got to be cool to know that was a guy stopping pucks for you back in the day. Now he's on the TV side.
Yeah, great personality for television, for radio. The guy's got a lot of character. He's, you think he's fun to be around, you know, in the media side. He was even more funner in the dressing room.
Yeah, I've been on the road with him. I know. It's a good time.
Chucking your bags around, aren't you?
Yep. Hal and Chris, the bag chuckers, for sure. Do you watch hockey on a regular basis, though, now that you're retired?
To be honest, it's not the first thing. If I'm scrolling across, or, you know, if the Preds are playing, or, you know, some of the old teams that I played with, I'll watch. But, you know, I'm a dad now, right? Not that the kids watch a lot of TV, but, you know, cartoons and the girly shows and stuff. So it's, they've definitely softened me up a lot.
Awesome. Well, hey guys, this has been so much fun. You know, this is where the fan side comes out of me a little bit. Jordan, you will always be a Nashville Predator. We don't worry about those other teams that you played for, and hope to see you back in Nashville, Smashville very soon. When things are a little bit more normal. But thanks for doing this tonight.
Hey, my pleasure, guys. Anytime, hit me up, Crispy. Always great to see you and chat with you, buddy.
Jordan, this sound will always remain as one of our memories.
my girls,
you with us, buddy.
My girls have a few of those whistles, and they're like, what? What is this, Tata? What is this? I'm like, one day you'll understand.
One
girls.
Day you'll understand, Tata. Hey, yeah. Thanks. We miss you, buddy. Love you.
All right, guys.
You and your family look after each other.
All right, guys. Thank you.
For Terry Crisp, for Jordan Tutu, I'm Chase McCabe. Thanks to New Amsterdam Vodka, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, Red Spirits and Wine. This has been Smashville Live, but stick around. Slapshot Radio. That's next on ESPN 102.5 The Game.